All right, we got Tosh Jeffries, three-time startup founder, global startup educator, love seeing founders grow, mentor to hundreds and hundreds of startup founders. Thank you so much for coming on and taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you so much for having me, Antonio. Appreciate being here.
Absolutely. So reading your bio and understanding what you do, the startup world has seen massive change over the last 4 to 5 years as well. Would love to kind of hear a little bit more about your journey into this world, professionally and personally, and kind of where you're at today and where you see everything going. Why don't you give us the rundown?
Okay, I'll give you the Coles Notes version. So I actually have a chemistry and biology degree from way back in the early 2000s. I ended up going into sales and marketing and then management consulting for just over a decade between the two. Then back in, almost 10 years ago, I got viral meningitis. And so when that happened, I had to make a very serious life change and take a look at how I was living. And so after that happened, I became a wellness coach first, and then I became a social media consultant, which led me directly into the world of being a founder because I love technology and everything that it had the ability to do. And so here we are, like 7 years later, where I went from a founder to taking all those lessons and actually coaching founders for the past 7 years.
Could you share maybe a moment or a key influence in your early life that led, to where you are overall, like to that pivot that you made towards entrepreneurship?
I really think it involved me taking a look at everyone has these very philosophical moments where they say, what is life about? And I took a look at it and said, well, what do I want? What's the legacy I want to leave? And most importantly, what do I enjoy doing? I spent way too many years of my life doing something that I was really good at, but I really, it didn't get me up in the morning. And so I started making changes to get me to the point where I did something really that I was really good at, but I love doing. I love working with founders. I love helping them brainstorm and fix things that are happening in their business that are clear to me, but they have no idea of seeing. And bring those things together so that I honestly live the most joyous life that I can and hopefully am a beacon to others through my ability to just say, you know what, I'm going to do what I'm good at and what I love doing. And that's at the end of the day, that's my end all be all.
I love it. I love it. So when I hear startups, thinking through the nature of startups inherently breeds a certain amount of risk tolerance, especially in the short term, for sure. So help us understand what startups are. Tell our audience a little bit more around startup culture, what it is, how we get it to a more stabilization phase. Help us understand the life cycle of a business there.
Absolutely. So startups to me are when you come up with a technology, and this is, I think, where a lot of people get it twisted who think that the startup world is so sexy and so attractive. But really, to me, the essence of being a startup is you have created some type of technology that solves a problem, not just for a small group of people, but a potentially large group of people at scale. And you are able to scale it with minimal resources. So to me, that's what a tech company truly is. And one of the biggest challenges that I found, not just myself from doing this, creating a technology that helps lots of people at scale, but working with so many founders, is usually they create this cool technology that solves a problem, but they haven't thought too far out about who am I solving it for? Is the pain and problem a big enough and obvious one for that audience? And most importantly, are they willing to pay? So usually founders come to me when they're like, we have this great solution and it's so groundbreaking. And I'm like, that's great. Can you find people who actually need it? Do you know who they are? Do you have a customer profile? And most importantly, are they willing to pay for you to solve it? Because to me, you can build all the technology in the world, but if you can't find an audience of people who have that problem and are willing to pay to solve it, then that's not technically a startup. And so I come across a lot of people who built this new cool technology, but they haven't really given thought to what's the problem that you're solving? Is there an audience for it? And are people willing to pay? And so to me, that's the biggest thing you have to overcome as a founder. And I've learned both positively and negatively the benefits of being able to do that as soon as possible.
And so your three startups that you were a founder of was Taza, HireKind, yep. and Diversa, or Diversa.
Yes,
what were some of the, like, what were some of those challenges and milestones for you? And starting out, obviously, like you mentioned, minimal resources, how did you navigate through the, through those start, that startup season? How did you navigate things to say yes to invest money into and things to say no to? And when resources are a little bit tighter to start out?
Show two completely different stories because I think they illustrate to those who might be listening what the startup challenges are and how to overcome them. So the first one with Taza, one of the great things that we did was, so we had built a software solution that we had built it originally for, like, I guess you could call it tech bros. So people who needed a way to share developer challenges and be able to share with one another. But what we ended up doing was we started to open up who could use it a little bit more and actually hit on a problem where it was actually used by women in the Middle East who wanted to use it as like a social platform, but where they chose who got to see it. So if you could imagine almost like a private kind of Twitter. So you could have a feed, but you chose who could see it instead of it being all public. And so we had pivoted that way. And so we had learned that if you hit on the right problem, then people will find you. So we had, I'm talking about less than, I'm sure our budget was less than $1,000. And we had grown to over 100,000 users in, I think it was less than 90 days. It just kept exploding and people were sharing it. And so I learned that you don't need to necessarily pay for things if you're solving a big enough problem. For our audience at the time, it was, we solved a problem for them that they were willing to share it freely. And so we had struck on that. Challenge was, though, we had to figure out a way to monetize. And so that was a big problem. So we had the users. Then I'm like, okay, well, how are we going to make money from this? Big problem. So founders, don't do that. If you're going to get the users, understand what your business model is behind it. So that's the first one. For when we started HireKind, one of the biggest challenges was we had lots of customers. We had a problem that people were willing to throw money at, but we didn't necessarily have the algorithm. And so with HireKind, what we were doing is we were helping tech companies in Silicon Valley and across California, actually, be able to find underrepresented talent to diversify their tech teams. So at that point, we were on the other end of the spectrum where we found people, we had the problem solved, we were able to get contracts, but we had a challenge with the technology and having it do it. So guess what? There's a concept that I use with my founders that I talk about all the time, which is called the Wizard of Oz, where you actually solve what you're doing. If you got to do it manually, you have to have your team figure it out and you build it almost as you go. So that's what we ended up doing with HireKind, where we were actually doing the choosing and doing the matching and making it look seamless. But it was actually our team doing it while we built the technology. Now, the challenge of that is you have to have a really good dev team working with you to be able to finalize the technology, which was our challenge on that end. So again, every challenge as a founder, once you solve one, you got to fix something else. And then the story continues. So the lesson for others there is make sure you have a really great dev team that actually can complete the work that you are building as you build it.
As a growing founder, let's say for someone who's just getting in, into the tech startup world, and they're constantly going to find bigger challenges, which I guess is the, that's the goal, right? Continuously find bigger challenges, because that means you're growing. But with that comes the inexperience of managing your money and your cash flow, because you could go broke in the short term, given the fact that most tech startups aren't profitable in year one. And you correct me if I'm wrong there. So with that, how do we navigate that financial water of understanding when to raise money? Because I think a lot of people have a misconception of what a tech startup is, because they're thinking like Twitter, you know, Facebook and all these things. When do we raise money? When do we decide that we want to bootstrap these things? How do we navigate the larger financial decisions that come with the scale of these businesses?
Great question, Antonio. And the first thing I would say is, number one, and this is a big challenge that I come across with most founders, where it's a shock for me to say it to them. If you do not have a business model that is in your business that you know for X number of users, we're going to drive this amount of revenue, then you need to find that figured out. and what's the biggest thing that you have at your arsenal, no matter what size you are, even if you only have an MVP, you're like month three, how do you do it? You talk to your customers. Your customers are going to tell you what they need. They're going to tell you what works. They're going to tell you how big that pain is that you're solving this problem for. And most importantly, and this is a question that most early founders leave out, they're going to tell you how much they're willing to pay if you do solve that problem for them. If you do not answer those four questions, very early stages, less than year one, I'd say if you don't figure that out within the first 3 months of having your MVP or solution, then you're doing yourself, you're doing investors, you're doing everyone who's created to your solution and your startup a disservice. You need to ask those fundamental questions. And if you don't know them, well, guess what? It's great. Go and talk to your customers and figure it out. Because until you know how to make money, and most importantly, whether or not what you're working on is a big enough problem to solve that people will pay you for, then you could be potentially throwing a lot of years, a lot of, because the startup world is a grind. It is, and you know, I've seen founders who've gone for like 3 years without a salary while they're building their solution, right? If you don't have those basic questions, like how is this going to make money right out the gate? I mean, gone are the days where the Twitters, the Googles, the Facebooks, you could literally build something, not have a clue about how you're going to make money and still be successful. But gone are those days. The investment VC mentality doesn't take to that quite kindly anymore. Those days are gone.
And when is it a good time to jump into the VC world to start taking on investors versus taking on debt? Like, what are some examples of times when it was the right time and you saw someone take on investors and maybe the wrong time, as well as debt on both sides of the coin?
Great question, Landon. So I would say it's super simple. And it sounds very basic. And I mean, I teach entire lessons just on this topic alone, but it's to know your unit economics, which simply means for every dollar we put in, this is how much we get out. Every startup, the faster you know that, and again, if you know that before month three, you're in a much better, you've lowered your risk. You understand the cost and the inputs that go into building your business. And it's a great place to be. And I tell you, very savvy VCs, if you can answer that question, you're already coming to the top of their list, because now they have a sense for, oh, if you know your economics that simply, that quickly, and you know your stats to build it on, you're better than 80% of the startups that are out there. So I'd say know that right out the gate. Know how many people you need to talk to get one paid customer. Those are part of your unit economics. How much does it cost for you to get all of those people in the door to get that one customer? Part of unit economics. If you understand how much it costs to get a customer, a paying customer, then, I mean, that is really half of the battle for a startup founder. Now, for most startup founders, they are throwing spaghetti at the wall. They don't know what's going on. But one of the biggest reasons why is that they don't know who their ideal customer is. Figure out who your ideal customer is. If you do, you know where they live, you know the channel you need to be on, where you can find them, and you can start really tailoring down your process, your message, you know, what they need to hear, listening for objections, the right objections that will lead to a sale, and you start building your playbook. The playbook is another piece that you need to have. It really helps maintaining your unit economics.
Sure. So over the last 4 to 5 years, we've seen some pretty massive, macro and microeconomic shifts. There was VCs that were investing in any startup possible, and everyone was able to get funding, to now credit is tightening, interest rates are super high, and people are just retaining cash. And now AI is super prevalent in this world and all these things. How have you seen the startup world shift over the last 4 to 5 years, and where is it at today, and how can you gain market share in this competitive landscape?
Honestly, and it sounds so simple for me to say it to you both here, if you know the problem that you're solving for your customers, like know it inside and out, I break it down to more than just, the usual one, which is your functional problems, like you're doing this one simple thing. All customers have social and emotional, we call it jobs to be done, things that they're trying to get solved, that they're trying to accomplish in their life. That if you can tap into that and connect it to your solution, you're going to have a much easier time actually making them your customer and also retaining them over the long term as well, because you've got them in, you've got them engaged, and it's something that's much easier to get them over the line to say yes. If you haven't taken the time to understand that deeply what your customer needs and what your customer wants, it's going to be hard to actually acquire them as a paying customer. If you dig into your solution that far and stay away, I mean, the challenge I see with most new founders is they get so tied into the technology itself. The first thing I say in most of my presentations to founders is people don't care about your solution. And it is super honest and super truthful. The VCs don't, your customer doesn't, like your users, they don't, your team probably does, but all the people who have the other connections to your solution don't care about specifically what it is. There is something they are trying to solve. With investors, they got to make a certain multiple on the investment that they put in your company because they have funds and funders to answer to. Your customers will have some solution or something that they want to feel at the end of the day. Usually, feelings are super powerful. Most founders overlook them. They want to feel a certain way by using your solution. If you can tap into those things early and give people what they want, that, to me, that's the secret behind having a successful startup, because then everything will start to fall into place. You're easier able to track what messaging you're putting out, what channels are you on, which means you're optimizing your budget and you're not trying to do 10 different things at once. You can have that focus, you're going to convert. It's just the nature of sales. That's how it works.
Yeah, you know, I really like, as we've continued to ask you these questions, you've really gone just back to the basics of just like having a good business is a good business decision, right? Like, absolutely. Find a problem and solve it and ask your customers for feedback on the problem. And that is going to make you more competitive in the landscape. You know, because if you continue to address that, then you'll continue to grow.
You will. And I mean, it does sound basic, Antonio, but it's so funny. And being a founder myself, I know how you can get so caught in all these other things and, oh, I got to be on social media and I have to pay for this marketing and I have to go do this, you know, investor relations campaign and whatever else you're doing, they're all distractions. If you can't understand who needs what you have, why they should have it, how to get laser focus onto them and give them that message so that honestly, there's no reason why they should say no. It's like, oh, well, this is going to solve it. I need this. If you can't do that, then all the other things that founders can get into are distractions. So stay focused. Stay on your customer. To me, customers are gold. That's how you're going to get your success, your numbers, your metrics, know your conversions, know your unit economics, so that also you can have intelligent conversations with the investor once you realize, oh, I need money because now I've kind of plateaued with what we're doing and we want to get to that next level. That's when we need an investor. And really, that's the time. I know you asked it earlier and I'm circling back, when you should be engaging in those investor conversations. And also, you need to plan those conversations a year before you need the money.
Sure. I say it all the time. 90% of business is just getting out of your own way, you know, and just dialing it down back to the simplicity and the basics. So let's shift gears a little bit. Tell us about your life. Like, tell us about like what your professional life. I know you're talking about a lot of the work that you do on the startup side, but like, help us understand your business model, what your trajectory looks like, et cetera, et cetera.
I live to work with founders. What I do with founders works in many cases. In as little as 3 months, I can help founders like 10x in one particular case, like 20x their revenue in like 3 months. All because I dived in and asked the questions that we were talking about just earlier, right? Who are your customers? Why do they come to you? How do you make their life easier, simpler, better, more improved? And then, okay, once I know that, we can come up with a messaging that actually helps light you on fire. So my goal within the next year and a half, and it's starting to come together, is to be able to actually reach more founders, because I do have a global range of experience where I'm not just working in North America. I've lived across Asia, Middle East, in Europe, and I do this work so as to expand and help even more founders. And a key for any of you who are listening who may want to reach out to me, If you are talking about the problem that you're solving for your customers, that you've fallen in love with solving that problem for your customers, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to respond quickly to that more than anything else where you're just telling me how great your technology is. Because honestly, I don't care. What problem are you solving? Who are you doing it for and why? And how can we make that better? And if that's the focus of our conversations, that's how my founders that I work with who do get those results, that's how they win. They're solving a problem for their customers.
That's great. So with your expertise as a, you know, specifically like a digital media strategist, right? Like what trends do you see dominating this landscape over the next few years overall?
Oh, I love that question, Landon, because it is super counterintuitive to probably what you're seeing. If you look at the digital and social media landscape, it keeps getting more complicated. There's more tools. There's more AI that's coming along saying it can craft things and it can do this and it can do that. I'm actually on the opposite end of the spectrum where I'm like, listen, you laser focus down. Don't be splitting your efforts across 5 different channels because guess what? Your ideal customers do not live on 5 different channels. If they do, you have no idea who your ideal customers are. Pick 1 channel, 2 maybe where you can A/B test. That's it. You don't need all the fancy tools. You don't need everything complicated. There's 2 solutions. Choose your channel where your customers live and work with landing pages, not your website pages. A landing page that you can clearly control where there is a one-to-one match between how many people are clicking on the ads and you can control the data, how many people are landing on your landing site. If you adopt those 2 simple rules, very simple, choose 1 to 2 channels and use ads, whatever channel you're coming from in your landing pages, you are going to more effectively be able to understand your specific conversion rates, your channels that work for you, and you're going to take out of this complication. I mean, I can't tell you how many founders come to me and they've got 5 different ads going on 4 different channels. And I'm like, I'm going to stop you here. This is never going to work. Never does. It's a great way for people in digital media to make money, but it's never going to get you the results that you're looking for. Everything should be an A/B test, period. Anything more than that, you're wasting money and you're throwing it down the drain.
Mm. It's great. It's great. The simplifier. That's what I'm going to call you. It's
so good. Go ahead. One thing called the hammer, but I'll take the simplifier. I like that better.
Well, I think some of the reason why we and Tony and I always call it confusing movement with progress. I heard Denzel Washington say that once, right? And a lot of us are seeing Alex Hormozi or all these different, you know, high level, huge influencers that are on all these platforms. They didn't start that way. They didn't just start off on all these platforms. So we have this kind of idea like, oh, I need to be on everything. And then you hear one marketer is like, oh, LinkedIn's where it's at. Or you hear one person say YouTube is the gold mine or Instagram is this or Facebook is that. And obviously you're always being marketed to. Everyone has their bias because people are having success on these different platforms. So then it becomes this like, you know, complexity becomes almost the enemy of execution. Or it just slows you down altogether, right? I just more of a thought to add, less of a question. But
you know what? And I love it too, Landon, because it goes right back to the fact that complexity means money, honestly, because marketers will sell you on everything that everything works. But at the end of the day, I always go back to my founders. It's no different. It's very similar. Like even I've learned that there's life lessons from being a founder that come back to the rest of your life. You might be paying all this money on 5 different channels and YouTube's where it's at, or maybe Twitter's where it's at today. And I'm like, really? Do you got more customers? Are they paying you? Because guess what? If you think you've nailed on to the magic bullet that's going to get you there, but you're not making revenue, right? You're not profitable. Then does it matter? And it's the same with everything else. You know, there's a lot of people who used to love talking about how they're busy. They're busy all the time, right? Startup founders are always busy. And I'm like, yeah, but are you making money? If you're not, really, how successful are you being? Like sure. In a startup or even in your life? Like, are you happy? Do you enjoy what you're doing it? Or is it just a slog and you're just like, oh, I don't even look forward to getting up in the morning. Like, really? So What success means to you and what's your life looking like? And I mean, it's a simple question, but sometimes it has to go that simple in order for people to get it.
That's so good. Now, as we wrap up here, let's fast forward 5 to 10 years. Everything goes right. Where is Tosh Jeffries?
My co-founders are going to be excited to hear this. Astra Studios, which is my new venture that's just about to light up. It's going to have three different locations. There's got to be a base here in North America, but we also want an office. And it's probably going to be, I'm going to guess, Taiwan, and then another one in Saudi Arabia, Riyadh. And because I've done work in all of those places, and so we'll be headquarters in each of those areas, helping startups to grow and helping to build local ecosystems.
Very exciting. Very exciting. I love how you were right to the point. You know exactly, you know, what this is going to look like over the next 5-10 years.
Absolutely.
So thank you. Thank you so much. And that's a testament to you actually practicing what you preach. So
absolutely.
That's awesome. So last question that we always ask every single person that comes on here, you know, this podcast is the Consistency Wins podcast. So we're huge on consistency. What does that word mean to you, and how important is it in the startup world?
To me, almost as synonymous with simplicity. Like, again, I go back and I ask founders very, very basic questions on like their numbers. Know your numbers and keep them basic. I don't need to hear how many impressions stuff has. Like, how many people are you reaching? And then how many people convert? You tell me those two numbers, I can tell you how successful your funnel is. And a few other questions, I can probably dig in to see where things are messy and things can be cleaned up. So if you have things simple, doesn't have to be super complicated. I can look at what you're doing and probably see holes before you can. So if you keep what you're working on super simple, to me, that's like helps with consistency. If you have four KPIs, key performance indicators that you're tracking in your business, and you track them regularly, that's all I would need. Give me four. Consistently, you know what you're doing to impact those numbers. I can tell you the health of your startup probably in less than 30 minutes. There are a lot of people that I come across who say, oh, it takes years. I'm like, no, it doesn't. You can see very simply. And mm-hmm. I think to me, consistency means keeping things simple, because then you're likely, if you have bad habits, we can fix them. If you already have great habits, you maintain them and you maintain the health of whatever you're working on. Same thing with like your lifestyle and your own health. I go to the gym, even at my age, I'm a little bit older than both of you. I think I'm older than both of you combined, actually. But you can't tell it because I maintain that consistency in the gym. All my founders know it. I eat well, and then I also party hard. Three things for me that are consistent with great health and youthfulness. And so they don't vary. They don't fall off the radar. I don't just sit at home and be a fuddy daddy. I go out and enjoy myself. And a lot of times I'm celebrating with founders and family and friends. And it's
awesome.
Consistent. Those three things never fall off.
So good. How can our founders follow you and connect with you?
Easiest way is on LinkedIn, because that's where everything is up to date. So LinkedIn.com/ToshJ. And when in doubt, just look for the hair. I have lots and lots of hair. I look exactly the same way in person as I do on my LinkedIn photos. So that's the easiest way. Ping me there. If you ping me and I know that you've listened to the Consistency Wins show, you will definitely hear from me.
Well, thank you so much, Tosh. This has been great. We learned, like, it's great because, like, it's forced me to unlearn, like, more focused on what are the exact KPIs that I need to be worrying about, and everything else is just noise right now. It's like, here's an input, here's an output. That's simple. So thank you so much. I know a lot of people got value from this podcast, so have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Antonio and Landon.